Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And we're going to be talking about binging TV shows. It wasn't really a thing a couple of years ago, but it's a thing now. And we're going to talk about your favorite binge shows that you've watched and maybe shows that you should binge right now. That's a whole new way of consuming television. It's crazy. But we'll get into that as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It is Monday. That means it's time for the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me every week. We talk about all the new movies, and we talk about the box office with Eric as well. Let's welcome the guys to the show. Here's Eric. Hey, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
All right, welcome back. I just want to say I caught up with Battle of the Sexes over the weekend, and I liked it. I liked it more than you guys did. I was with it pretty much. I thought both performances were great. You know, Steve Carell is really great in it, and so is Emma Stone. And I have to say, one of my favorite parts of the movie, one of my favorite performances in the movie, and I'm blanking on the guy's name, the guy who played Billie Jean King's husband. I thought he was terrific, and he was in Colossal. He's the guy who was in Colossal, like the sort of love interest for which, you know, he hits on her or she hits on him. That guy, that's the guy who played Billie Jean King's husband. I really liked the way that character was written, and the way it was performed, and I thought it was an interesting dynamic. And then at the end of the movie, to find out, I didn't know that they were the godparents of. of her kids, his kids. I thought that was pretty so an interesting kind of relationship. But I liked it. I thought it was very entertaining. It's a crowd pleaser. The people, that, you know, the crowd that we saw it with enjoyed it. My folks enjoyed it. And of course, you know, everybody in the room was old enough to remember. It was a very old skewing crowd because I think everybody in the theater that we saw it with was old enough to remember when it happened. But I liked it. I liked it. I texted you, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why John C. McGinley's in the movie.
No.
What? I don't get, Colin, was that not weird? Just like there's John C. McGinley. He's got two lines and that's it.
Right. Yeah. It's all great to see him in a movie, but, you know, give him something to do.
I know. I was like, why is he in the movie? This is so weird. It's not like he's an unknown. I mean, he's John C. McGinley.
Right.
So anyway, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was a crowd pleaser and I liked it. And I thought both performances were really strong and they recreated it really perfectly. You know, I mean, they did a really, really nice job, whether it was, you know, messing around with, like the animation or whatever it was to make it computer graphics, to make it look like it was what it was. I also thought it was hilarious that they had Howard Cosell and then they put the actress who played Rosie in the thing. Because, you know, who are you going to get to play Howard Cosell? You know what I mean? Without it being incredibly distracting. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I thought what they did, I thought how they handled it was really pretty clever. So anyway, I thought it was an enjoyable movie. So, all right, let's start. We got some stuff to talk about here. And Colin, why don't you start with Woodchuck?
All right. Well, this stars Kirsten Dunst as a woman who works at a marijuana dispensary. And at the beginning of the film, her mother is on her deathbed, and Dunst rolls her a joint spiked with something deadly, basically in assisting in her mother's death at her mother's request. So her mother dies at the beginning of the film, and the rest of the film deals with the guilt and remorse of that, and the fact that she and her boyfriend's marijuana, dispensary assisted in that. There's also a coworker who dispenses the stuff, and they have a strange relationship. But then she starts getting high on her own product, and the movie takes us into her paranoia and her deteriorating state of mind. And the movie isn't anti-drug or anything like that, but it is exploring how a drug that can help you can also destroy you if you use it for the wrong reasons. Or at least that's what I think the movie wants us to get out of it. It's kind of vague what the movie wants us to get out of it. And it's a movie that is very much what people think when they think indie film. That's not always a bad thing, of course, but in this case, it's a film that is made by two first-time filmmakers and fashion designers, Kate and Laura Malevi. They've never made a film before. This was their first time out. And they've clearly watched a lot of movies where people don't say much. And, you know, everything is just kind of mumbled. And everything's just kind of, you know, it's very minimal. And there's a lot of scenes of Kirsten Dunst just sitting, looking, you know, dazed and remorseful and, you know, walking through the redwood forests, building a fence in the last half hour. And you're not really sure, you know, who you're supposed to, you know, really be on board with here. And the movie ultimately just kind of feels empty. It's just kind of an exercise in watching somebody you don't really care that much about kind of deteriorate a little more and more as the movie goes on. And by the end, you're just kind of wondering what was that all about? There's some really nice visual, you know, there's some beautiful shots in the film, you know, so it's very well, you know, they got the right cinematographers and they got the right editors, but they just didn't get the right story or they just didn't really have much in the way of characters that I really was invested in. So it's kind of a dreary slog for about 90 minutes. Which is too bad because you got Kirsten Dunst is clearly she's invested in it. But they didn't really give her much to do aside from just, you know, looking tired and stoned. You know, I'd like a little more out of Kirsten Dunst. So this is a movie that I really can't recommend. And, you know, I can't even really say wait for DVD because it's just really kind of pointless to me.
Okay. All right. And that's Woodshock with Kirsten Dunst, and it's playing at the Landmark Century Center on Clark and Diversey. Okay, guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got to take a break here for the news, and when we come back, we'll have more new movie reviews for the Monday Morning Movie Reviews right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday morning to review all the new movies, and that's what we're doing right now. We welcome back Eric.
Hello.
And Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right. Eric, why don't you tell us about Pearl Jam Let's Play 2?
Okay. Well, this is a Pearl Jam concert documentary that takes place over the course of the couple nights of concerts that they did at Wrigley Field last year. Now it seems like, you know, why do a movie about another concert at Wrigley Field? Well, it happens to be taking place during a very special time last year around Wrigley Field, namely the championship run done by our Chicago Cubs.
Yeah.
So this movie, you know, is basically sort of like a 65-70% concert film with, you know, following around not just the band, but particularly Eddie Vedder, and talking about his memories of Wrigley Field and sort of taking us a little tour of the neighborhood a little bit. There's actual video footage in the movie of him walking around Wrigley Field circa 1992. Not to mention other remembrances. There's footage of some of their first concert at the Metro. And then also obviously taking us through what was going on with the Cubs during this particular period. So this is a movie that is made for definitely two types of people, Pearl Jam fans and Chicago Cubs fans. And if you are both of those, you're going to have a pretty remarkable time with this film. It's a combination of, you know, two things we really like a lot, it actually becomes quite a really good concert film. The concert stuff is shot really well. Obviously, the music, you know, is really terrific. They kind of mix up the songs a little bit, sort of kind of reflect things that are going on with the Cubs at the time, and there's just one sort of emotional kick in the teeth after the next, just, you know, obviously with the, everything that was going on with the Cubs, but they throw in the appearance by Steve Gleason
yep.
at Wrigley Field,
yep.
A bit more of that than we saw actually in the documentary Gleason. There's another kind of really poignant story about a fan, a Pearl Jam fan and Cubs fan who was waiting 4 days before the concert to be in there. So there's just all these remembrances and all these things just kind of intersect to make this really emotional experience. And it works in both ways. It works as a wonderful nostalgic memory of everything that went on with the Cubs last year. And it's also a really good concert film. And I didn't get to see this on the big screen, but I imagine it probably looks and sounds pretty amazing because what I just saw just my home system here, just, you know, I actually, you know, rarely crank up the sound for anything that I'm watching. And this one I definitely did because the concert stuff is really great. And it's the kind of movie that Nick goes made for us.
Yeah.
Pretty much, you
yeah.
know?
yeah. I loved it. As a Pearl Jam fan and as a Cub fan, it was fantastic. And everything that you said is absolutely true. And it's really, you really get into it. There's a lot of emotion here and reliving, you know, the history it was really interesting to see, you know, some of the older footage of Vedder, which I thought was really interesting
yeah. And
fun. And also, you know, how dramatic the Cubs season was last year. They really play that up in the movie. And I was at the first night when they mm-hmm. played Wrigley. I went the Saturday night, the first night. And it was amazing, and they were great. They played for like over 3 hours. And that was the night when they brought the Santos out onto stage and saying someday we'll go all the way. And it was a great night all the way around, and the concert was great, and they're an unbelievable live band. They're an incredible mm-hmm. live band, and that's what they've kind of, the band has morphed into, you know, they kind of fall into that now. They kind of fall into the jam band category where they don't, you know, they tour during the summer and they, you know, they play 10-minute songs and mm-hmm. and they get a lot of the same crowd that goes to see some of the other jam bands and stuff like that, even though that they've morphed into a different band than they were when they started. And I think a lot of that's in the movie as well. But it's a great documentary just in terms of, if you want to see great music, it's got great music. If you want to see a really emotional story and some great memories about Wrigley and about the Cubs, it's got that to it. So, and I loved it, but I mean, I was predisposed to. So,
oh yeah, yeah. And I'm not a guy that I don't go to a lot of concerts anymore because yeah. I just, you know, if I know you don't have good seats, I figure what's the point,
right?
And you know, just have a film like this that, you know, puts you, you know, in every imaginable great position possible
yeah.
to see a Pearl Jam concert. This is absolutely perfect.
Yeah, yeah. I did not make the final cut.
No.
I mean, I'm in the trailer.
Where are you in that stadium?
I'm in the trailer. Did you guys know I'm in the trailer?
No.
My voice is in the trailer. Like they took a piece of one of my shows.
Oh.
When I was talking about Pearl Jam at Wrigley Field, and I'm, all of a sudden, you know, Procopi sent it to me. And he goes, you know, about 35 seconds in, you might want to listen to this. So I'm watching the trailer, and then boom, there's my voice. I'm like, what?
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, but I didn't make the final cut though. I'm not in the movie, but I did make the trailer, which is fun. So, anyway.
Well, you have that.
I have that. Right. Okay. All right, Colin.
Yeah.
Tell us about Victoria and Abdul.
All right. Well, this is the latest historical drama from Stephen Frears. In fact, kind of a comedy too, I should say. And it stars Dame Judi Dench as Queen Victoria, who is 81 years old and often falls asleep at lunch, and who really has no one to talk to, not like she used to. And she gets paid a visit by an Indian clerk named Abdul, who is played by Ali Fazal. He's just there to, as sort of a formality, he's just there to present to her a ceremonial coin. And really not much to that, really, except that the queen takes an interest in him and asks that he stays longer, eventually becomes one of her top servants. And Abdul obliges, but much to the dismay of his assistant, who just wants to get out of there, But they strike a friendship, and an unlikely friendship, because he's seen, you know, he's Indian, so he's seen as lower class, who is unfit to even look at her. But their friendship gains a lot of controversy in both countries, as he becomes as much of her teacher as a servant, or actually probably more of a teacher than a servant, but also, you know, more of a friend. So I might sound like a skipping record from last week when we reviewed Battle of the Sexes. This is a movie where you watch the trailer and you think, okay, I know exactly what this movie is. And when I watched the movie, I felt like I was just kind of just watching an hour and 40-minute trailer of itself. It's a movie that is kind of, everything's kind of painted in broad strokes. Everything is kind of written in kind of a hasty way to get to the dramatic beats that we come to expect from a film like this. And I felt like it was kind of, like I said last week, like it's just kind of underdeveloped and kind of just made to win Oscars. It is a very well-produced film. I mean, it looks beautiful. The, you know, production design, the costumes, they got the period just perfect. And Dame Judi Dench, it's clearly her movie, but, you know, I've seen her play a queen before. It's nothing new. I mean, it's exactly who I expect to be cast in a movie like this. And when you think of Dame Judi Dench starring in a film, this is exactly the film you would imagine that being. And I it has charm. It's not without moments. It's not without, interest. You know, I think there's definitely a crowd for this movie who will eat it up, who will love it. I think it just kind of, it didn't affect me that much. It just kind of felt very formulaic and very much like a movie that we're going to be hearing about until Oscar time, but we're not going to be that thrilled about. So I wanted to like it more, but by the end, I just kind of felt like I didn't really know these two as well as I should have. And, that it just was kind of underwritten, underdeveloped. And, so I just wasn't that crazy about it. So I can't really quite recommend it.
Okay. All right. I haven't seen it. It's, playing at, the River East. It's playing at, the Century in Evanston. It's playing at the Landmark Century Center Cinema and in Lincolnshire. So, but that's called Victoria and Abdul. Okay, guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, hold on a second. We're going to take a quick break here, and we got more movies to talk about and the box office right here on the Monday Morning Movie Reviews on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 o'clock. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking about binge-watching TV. What are some of your favorite shows that you've binged and all that cool stuff? And we'll get into that. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning and it's a jokey time. But we've got one more movie to talk about here with the guys. Eric and Colin join me every Monday morning to review the movies. And welcome back, Eric.
Hello.
And welcome back, Colin.
Hello.
All right, Colin, tell us about American Maid.
All right. Well, this is another movie based on a true story. It is that time of year, after all. And it stars Tom Cruise as a pilot for TWA in the mid-70s or late-70s, who catches the attention of the CIA, who are in need of a pilot kind of just crazy and skilled enough and not with a lot of scruples to pull off this covert operation where he can – or semi-covert, where he can fly over war-torn territories in South America and take pictures from above. And he's good at it. It's dangerous, of course. But then he eventually gets caught up with a drug cartel who happens to be Pablo Escobar, who hasn't yet achieved the notoriety that he eventually will. So because Cruz is desperate for money, because he has a wife and a kid and soon another kid on the way, he takes that job too. And the CIA get wind of that, but can't really do a whole lot about it except offer him another position that is also fraught with danger, but is also very lucrative. And the film spans about like 8 or 10 years of this guy flying his planes in hostile territories, becoming a drug runner, and eventually leading a kind of Forrest Gump-like existence where he's constantly running into these major political figures of that era. But he got rich working for all the wrong people and was quite naive about his role in everything. Now, I forgot to mention the CIA agent who discovered him is played by Domhnall Gleeson. And it's interesting to see just how that character is always reacting to Cruz, who is, you know, could be a potential blight on everything if people discover, you know, who he is and what, you know, what his role is in all of this. And so it's a movie that packs a lot into 2 hours. And it's the kind of true story movie that has the kind of execution like American Hustle, or, you know, to a lesser or lesser version like War Dogs from last year. It has that kind of, you know, that kind of ambition to be kind of Scorsese like in how it condenses time through these montage sequences, where you know, a song like "Fortunate Son" wouldn't be out of place. You know, you kind of expect to hear that kind of song throughout the movie. It's directed by Doug Liman, who I think does a good job of, you know, getting us on board with this character and showing us who he really is. And I think the movie does a really good job at the very beginning of introducing this character. He's an average pilot on a TWA plane, and he does something during a typical flight that is a great way of telling us exactly who this character is and what he's about. And I, you know, it's not a perfect film by any stretch. There are a lot of moments where I wish there was a little more snap to the dialogue. You kind of wish there was somebody at the, you know, at the keyboard who could really punch up a lot of this movie and make it really soar. But I think Cruz is very good in the film. It's a different, it seems like a different kind of role for him right now. a guy who you're not really rooting for or against, you know, very much an anti-hero. And I think that's a good kind of role for him, and I enjoyed watching his performance in it, and I enjoyed learning the story. I think it's an interesting little sidebar kind of story that, you know, didn't really know about. And so I think ultimately the movie is works as an entertaining exploration of greed and you know, people who will do all the wrong things for all, maybe a lot of the right reasons. And it's also a good movie about naivete and when doing those things. So not a perfect film, but I do recommend it.
Okay. All right, Eric, what about you?
I'm a little less so. Surprisingly that, because yeah, I agree with a lot of things that Colin says. And we've had, you know, started kind of a spate of movies over the last few years that based on true stories that, you know, keep telling us, you know, like, here's the real story. Here's what you don't know about that. You could maybe even throw Battle of Sexes in there. But like Sully from last year, you know, reported to tell us, you know, what we didn't know about the flight. And then it turned out it was like, no, we kind of knew all that. And I would say the same thing about the upcoming Molly's Game. But this movie actually is much better than that, because when Cruz's character looks into the camera during one of the many video testimonials that he does and says, "Trust me, it gets crazier from here." It actually lives up to that promise that you know, even if you haven't quite guessed at some point exactly where this story is headed, and I think that the previews have done a pretty good job of, you know, concealing that fact, you do eventually get there and you go like, oh, this is going to lead to this event in history. And I think, you know, a lot of that works. But at the same time, I think we've seen a spate of films over the years that have tackled some degree of this situation or this period or other people who are doing things like this at the time. They're not all necessarily related, but they all feel related in tone and somewhat of the subject matter. Movies like Blow with Johnny Depp, even something like American Hustle has the feel of this movie. Kill the Messenger with Jeremy Renner took a journalistic approach to something stuff like this that was going on at the time. And this movie is entertaining. It's breezy. It's fun. I really enjoyed the scenes with all the planes. I think a lot of that stuff is really well done. And I think Cruise is good here. But the entire movie, even though I was, riding on its wings, I just couldn't quite shake the fact that I felt that there's just this overt familiarity to it, and I couldn't quite get over that hump. It's not certainly not a bad film. I wouldn't tell people not to see it, but I couldn't shake this feeling that I had the entire time that I'd pretty much just kind of seen this all done before. So I'm kind of on the fence about this one, but going negative on it.
Okay. All right, guys, hang on, okay? We'll come back and I'll tell you what I thought of it. American Made is the movie that we're talking about, and Tom Cruise's latest. And we'll talk about that, and I'll give you my thoughts on it, and then we'll talk about the box office and talk a little bit about what's coming out next week. Some big stuff coming out next week. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Yeah. And we're here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, weekday mornings, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. Okay, we are in the middle of the Monday morning movie reviews. Eric and Colin join me every Monday to talk about the movies. And Eric and Colin both just reviewed American Made. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right. I got to tell you, I really like this movie. I know you guys were kind of iffy on it, but I thought it was terrific. And I think Tom Cruise is great in it. I just think this is like such a great role for him. And I think he really shines in this movie. He's very funny. And I thought the movie moved really well. I didn't really feel that it was, Eric, I don't necessarily agree with you about how it might feel derivative of other based on true story things that we've had over the past few years. I can see that American Hustle might be the closest to it, and of course it also helps that they both have the word American in the title. But I thought the stuff between Cruise and Domhnall Gleeson was great, and I thought it was really well done and very entertaining. And it was there were a lot of things in this movie that I didn't know about, that I had no clue about, so I learned about it. And I love the fact that it jumps all over the place and then it moves. And I think it's carried by a great performance by Tom Cruise, a really really smart and funny and very charming performance by Tom Cruise. So I liked it. I thought it was really good. I think there's a lot of good action sequences. The fly sequences are great. There's a good amount of humor in it throughout the entire movie. And it was a story that I didn't know about that I thought was interesting and well told. And just on the simplest of levels, this is a very entertaining movie. Like it's a crowd pleaser. It's just a very entertaining movie from the beginning to end. And I think it's anchored by a really terrific performance by Tom Cruise, who people just don't like, evidently, judging by the box office. So we'll get to that in a second. But I'm recommending it. In fact, I really liked it a lot, and I think it's one of Tom Cruise's best performances in a long, long time. And it certainly makes up for The Mummy. So there you go.
I will give it that much.
All right. Well, cool. Next week, boy, but some big week next week. We've got The Mountain Between Us, which is Stringer Bell and Kate Winslet on a mountain. Mark Felt, The Man Who Brought Down the White House, based on the true story. There you go, another true story movie.
Uh-huh.
With Liam Neeson, who's playing the guy who ended up being Deep Throat, who took down Nixon. And so we'll see how that movie plays now. we have Lucky, which is the is it the last performance Harry Dean Stanton? Because he might have. Colin, you said he had another one on IMDb.
Yeah, it looks like there's another one in the pipeline, according to his IMDb page.
Okay, well, Lucky comes out next week, and then of course Blade Runner 2049, which is getting some pretty amazing reviews already. So I'm very excited about it. And I hope it's good because Blade Runner is one of my favorite movies of all time. So anyway, so that's what's coming out next week. Colin, we will talk to you then.
Sounds good.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
Bye.
There you go. There's Colin. And now, Eric, are you going to hang out here and tell us about the box office?
Yeah.
Some really interesting stuff here. So number one came back to number one. What? How many times was it number one? Was it number one for like 2 weeks in a row?
It was 2 weeks, and then Kingsman overtook it last week, and now it's back on top.
It, $17.3 million, bringing its total domestically, $291 million. That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the drop it had this week, expected, but, not a huge drop. I think the Kingsman drop was probably a bit more than people expected, yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people thought American Made, would probably do it, at least in the low 20s. That's what I initially was sort of expecting it to do.
But it's
a horse race. I mean, these placements could actually change tomorrow. I mean, maybe American Made does get on top. I mean, there's basically $500,000 separating the top three movies, the box office.
Yeah, the numbers are real close, really, really close. It is at $17.3 million.
Yeah.
American Made is at $17.01 million.
Yeah.
And The Kingsman is at $17 million. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of 17s in the first three.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So,
and this is, the American Made, I think, a lot of people were probably not expecting it to do huge numbers. I mean, Colin kind of mentioned it was kind of a different role for Cruise. I will always push back on that a little bit because this is exactly the kind of role that he made his career on.
Oh, absolutely.
basically.
Yeah.
Yes, he's been doing a lot of action-oriented blockbusters for the last, very least this particular decade. But it is nice to see him go back to this. But it's like the lowest grossing or the lowest, one of the lowest opening weekends, since, Legend in 1986.
Ooh.
Maybe not the open, not necessarily the openings, but the final gross is going to be, and
yeah.
That you'd have to go back to, Legend in 1986 to find a Tom Cruise movie that, didn't make $50 million. I think that's probably where this one is headed, unless the it has a pretty decent drop next week and the word of mouth kind of kicks in.
Yeah, that's that's disappointing. I don't know.
Yeah, but at the same time, and people, people will be making Cruz has lost his luster and this kind of thing. Well, the thing's already made more money overseas than it will in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Period, and that's going to continue. So, and it's not a heavily budgeted film either, so it has that working in its favor, and I think when the final numbers come in, it will actually be a success.
Yeah, all right, well, I'm rooting for him, I always
mm-hmm.
do, so
as I do too.
Yeah, anyway, so that's American Made, and I would hope that more people would see it, so
yeah.
We'll see what happens, and then $17 million for the Kingsman.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's a drop. How much did it drop?
That's like 57-58%. Drop in the second week, so the pace it's on right now, it is dropping much quicker than some of these other movies that you could compare it to.
Yeah.
So it's very possible that it's not going to reach 100 million in the U.S. It is over 200 million total worldwide, but it's going to need to get its get up there a little bit more, closer to like 350, 400 before it can be reasonably considered a success.
Okay. Number four, the Lego Ninjago movie, which is $12 million. That's obviously the least of any of the Lego movies.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it looks like, the final gross on this is probably going to end up in the U.S. somewhere between 55 and 60 million, which is well over 100 million less than the Lego Batman movie made.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, Eric, thanks, man.
Okay.
All right, there you go. Eric Childress, everybody, and he does the box office with us every week, and we review the movies. And we're going to take a break. We got the news coming up next on 720 WGN.